Hi, welcome to the Microdose Diet. I'm your host, Peggy Van de Plasch, and we're talking about all things psychedelics, professional growth, and personal development. So I just came back from the Wonderland Conference, which was in Miami, and I learned a bunch of very interesting things that I wanted to share with you. So hold on, and I hope you're going to get intrigued. So that conference, as I said, is in Miami. Always nice to enjoy the sun, especially when, like me, you're based in Toronto. And thousands of people come there, and it's really people from every walk of life, scientists, MDs, entrepreneurs, investors, participants, enthusiasts. So you really have a wide range of people going there. And it's probably the best conference, actually, best event I've been to. It was just so friendly, so nice, very different from the usual conferences I used to go in finance and technology. No one is talking and whining about open banking and everything in between. So I was very lucky to speak on the stage when I was there. I actually spoke about two different topics. One was about microdosing psilocybin for entrepreneur and executive, obviously. And the other one was about conscious businesses. And I think they are very linked and intertwined, actually. I would say simply because entrepreneurs and executives who microdose are not only more mentally healthy and performant, they are also more mindful and more present, which obviously they bring at work, in their home, and everywhere in between. You know, this presence, this mindfulness is really something that is becoming themselves. So they are making their decisions, professional and personal, from an elevated space. You know, they are not reacting anymore. They're really acting. They're off their autopilot, and they're not as fearful as they used to be. So from my perspective, being a conscious or a more conscious professional and individual doesn't mean that you're becoming a yoga teacher in Bali. Absolutely not. It's about really becoming more present, more authentic, more confident in yourself and in your own choices. And this changes happens in your daily life, the life you're already having. It is not about totally changing your life. It's just that the current life you're in, your actions and your perceptions are different. They're really upleveled. They're mindful. They're way less driven by fear, by anger, by scarcity. So I would actually tend to argue against the idea that we need more conscious businesses. I think actually we need more conscious executives and more conscious entrepreneurs in the current organizational structure that exists. That can be financial institutions, technology businesses, governments, small, big, local, international. But what we need is people of influence who are becoming more authentically themselves. They are more independent and critical thinkers. They are more inspired and they are less, you know, on this merry-go-round. They're less stuck, they're less desolate and less easily influenced. And that's really where the needle will be moved in the current structure with more mindful, more present, calmer individuals, not by starting another yoga studio. And this is really how I approach my own business, the microdose diet. So whether it's about, you know, the book I wrote, the online course that I'm putting together, also the microdosing products I'm working on, speaking engagement and so on, everything I touch, it goes through this dual perspective. It's my own lithium test. Am I inspired by this project? And would it be a profitable or at least valuable project for my business as a whole? And if one of the answers is no, well, I just shelve that project. Doesn't mean I will never take it back again, but at this point, I just shelve it. And this is really regardless of what my competitors are doing, what experts are saying, what I'm supposed to do. And in the past, I really used to question, my intuition, my thought process, my decision. But now, and I really, really credit my microdosing practice, so microdosing plus alternative practices around it, not just microdosing. It's not a magic pill, but I really credit my own practice of the microdose diet to become very confident in my own analytical and decision-making abilities. I recently made investment decisions for my businesses that were quite significant, and I did the due diligence. Obviously, I always do the due diligence, but once I made that decision, it was clear for me that it was the right decision, and I didn't double guess myself. I didn't ask others' opinion. It was done, and now it's happening. I'm committed to it, and it's unfolding. So, I would say in large organization or even smaller organization, but more traditional structure, having decisions made in isolation from what is good for the boss career, whatever it means for the organization as a whole, but what competitors are doing, what overpaid consultants are advising. If we were to remove all these external influences that are actually not positive influences, the bottom line results for this company would be way higher. But it would also be way more pleasant work environments. But this again would require individuals who approach decisions making in this organization from a place of independence, confidence, and mindfulness, I would say. So, and really for that to happen, professionals need a very solid internal compass. And the challenge is that this internal compass has likely been robbed from them many decades ago due to a very, very heavy conditioning to be socially acceptable, to obey and be in the norm. And because of this lack of internal compass, now they cannot connect to their own decision making. They don't have confidence in themselves, and that creates a lot of challenge. So if you look at people like Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, whether you like them or not is not the question here. These are people who know what they want. There is no doubt there. They know exactly what they're aiming for. And they're 100%, if not 110%, committed to their goals. But most of us, we don't have that. We're not sure of ourselves. We're not sure of our thoughts, we're not sure of our choices, we're not sure about our abilities. And we're not even able to fully commit to ourselves and to our goals. And it's very, very difficult to sustain others' rejection, others' judgment, others' criticism. And for me, this whole context was one of the reasons I started microdosing psilocybin because I was extremely frustrated with the state of affairs. I was very angry. I was very frustrated with myself. I would say depressed and even despaired because I was unable to play my own game fully. And I knew without the shadow of a doubt that when I die, if I were to continue to live my life that way, and be filled with regrets and disappointments. And it's really not about taking mindless risks. I don't do that. It's not about, again, becoming a yoga teacher in Bali, but it's really about living the life you're living currently, fully, authentically, and as big as it gets. I give you a lot of context on my perspective between microdosing psilocybin, conscious entrepreneurships, and conscious executives, success, passion, happiness at work. So now let's explore the three top takeaways that I got from the conference. Yes, it all tied together. So the first thing that I thought was very interesting was the correlation between psychedelics, mental health, and longevity. And so for this year edition, Wonderland actually added longevity and mental health to their streams. Before, it was just psychedelics. And at posteriori, it really seems obvious that these angles, this perspective are tightly interconnected. And one of the speakers was actually Dev Asprey, and he made a very, very thoughtful presentation actually on brain longevity. And he was really connecting the dots between these different points, psychedelics, mental health, and longevity. And, even if we are still miles away from really understanding the implication between the brain and the mind, it is pretty plausible that a healthy mind and a healthy brain are very tightly correlated. And in the same way, healthy minds and brains seem pretty key in increasing longevity. And by longevity, I don't mean just lifespan, I mean living a fulfilled, long and healthy life. So it's not just the number of years you want to increase, it's also the living your life fully. And what was very interesting at this conference is that we had a lot of people in the longevity space. And again, makes a lot of sense. Psychedelic impact mental health by treating stress, depression, anxiety, PTSD, addiction. And obviously that improvement in mental health increase participants, patients' longevity. So investors in the longevity space were, I would say, everywhere, testing, pressure testing the businesses and investigating. So I mentioned Dave Asprey is actually launching a $100 million longevity VC fund. Gary Smuts, who's the managing partner at Longevici. So it's written Longevici, Longevici. I mean, I love that name. I really, really, I don't know who came up with that name, but it's a great name. So Gary spoke on stage about the challenges and opportunities of investing in mental health. And so Longevici is an early stage VC fund, and their mission is really to bring breakthrough biotech companies to market. And I would say they're really aiming at focusing on this science that will transform health and change lives. So they really have a very big mission. And you can expect, I would say, in the near future, more and more correlation between psychedelics, mental health, and longevity. And one might argue actually biohacking, because what is microdosing if it's not biohacking actually? And so you'll see the discussion being recentered even more on psychedelics for healing, thanks to that connection with mental health and longevity. So that was one of the big takeaways from the conference. The second big takeaways is really about the lobbying, the veterans, end-of-life care, and civil disobedience. So how is that coming together? So there were a lot of lobbyists actually at Wonderland. And they came from multiple angles and multiple, I would say, path. But the bottom line was always the same for everyone, providing wider access to psychedelics for healing purposes. And one thing I always thought very interesting with psychedelics is the fact that it's really one of the few topics in the US that have bipartisan support. And you would expect, or at least I was expecting, that it would be a liberal playground having more access to psychedelics. But actually, the fact that psychedelics could have such a positive impact on veterans' mental health, it really make the topic of psychedelics front and centers for every politician, regardless of their stripes and colors. So, and for reference, the Veterans Affairs is the largest healthcare system in the US. So it's an extremely, extremely important player in the space. And right now, both in Canada and in the US, Veterans Affairs departments are really working hard on clinical studies for their members. So that can be targeting addictions, targeting PTSD, obviously. You have very, very alarming rate of homelessness, addiction, suicide among veterans, and supporting their reintegration in civil society with strong mental health is, I would say, obviously top of mind for all the politicians. So that is really the angle here of the lobbying and the fact that the veterans are actually the first in line to be able to not only get access, but to move the goalpost. The second, I would say, angle for the lobbyist and the politician is end-of-life care. And it's really a topic that is, I would say, dear and near to the hearts of many politicians, and that might help accelerate access to psychedelics at large. And when it comes really to the decriminalization and the legalization of psychedelics, really a lot is happening, which is really fabulous. However, the timing and the specifics of that are still pretty murky, which brings us to civil disobedience. And many, many people I met at the conference are frustrated by what they see as an irrational and unfair legal framework when it comes to the use of psychedelics for healing purposes. So many calls to push the boundaries of what is currently legal were actually heard from the stages of Wonderland. And I mean, these calls were made by everyone: scientists, MDs, psychotherapists, entrepreneurs, investors, patients, practitioners. I mean, the frustration and the incompression, it was very palpable. And some even made parallels with Rosa Parks, women's voting rights. And the rationale was, we broke the rules to expand. And I can totally see that. I'm from the same school of thoughts. And you know, this cognitive dissonance between, on one end, oh, I mean, negative substances like tobacco, alcohol are managed by the government, and all psilocybin, psychedelics with all the health benefits we're seeing are still a Schedule I drugs. And that is really mind-blowing and exasperating and frustrating and angering. So I think that with the increase of lobbying, the veterans' health crisis, and a more outspoken and bold community, we can expect to see an acceleration of the pace of legislative and regulatory changes. So that is the second takeaway. And the third takeaway is really about the flurry of actors, approaches, products, and businesses that were present. And the fact that nonetheless, they were all tied by one common reality. And there was a very, very wide array of actors that are represented at Wonderland. I mentioned veterans, scientists, coaches, to content creators, and more of this TikTok culture, whatever it means. But everyone comes with their own background, perspective, and this saying that to a man with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. That is true in any industry, and it is true as well in the psychedelic industry. So we all come with our own set of tools, our own set of skills, our own set of experience. And these tools, skills, experiences, they resonate with a specific audience. So in my personal case, my background as a banker, as a venture capitalist, make me connect to an audience of executive and entrepreneur, because it is easy for us to connect around, common business challenges and corporate experiences. And veterans is going to connect with veterans. I mean, that's despite disparate backgrounds that we all have, what I see is multiple commonalities. So the first commonality I see between all of us actors in the space is the key importance we all make on preparation and integration when using microdosing for healing, and whether it's a microdose or a macrodose. And everyone really agreed that to maximize the benefits of microdosing or macrodosing actually for healing, it needs to be used mindfully and strategically. And this is where we see the value of protocols. So many protocols, such as mine, the microdose diet, use journaling as one of their tools. Protocols are actually the main differentiators for the different approaches of healing with psychedelics. Again, these protocols are rooted in one's experience and expertise, while obviously being personalized for the specific audience. So the microdose diet protocol has been optimized to 10 to 50 minutes a day only, because no executive or entrepreneur could spend more time than that. So there is really not only an importance of this integration and preparation, but also an alignment with what the audience can actually do and is interested in doing, let's be honest. The second commonality is really the focus on accessing quality products. And this seems to be a huge challenge for many of the participants I met. I was speaking with someone who's a veteran and is based in Miami, is suffering from PTSD, and he told me about a private club that is actually offering access to quality products. So the members pay a subscription fee for the privilege to buy high quality products. That's what they have to do. And this struggle is really real, because I can understand that establishing trust with a psychedelic provider is not straightforward, especially due to the gray zone that most have to operate under. I know that every time I took products, I knew whether I met the CEO, whether I knew if someone was very close to the company. I never, took whatever products that was coming my way. And that really gave me the confirmation regarding the launch of my own microdosing products line, because I am currently working with a clinic that is already providing premium psilocybin caps to their in-person patients under the special access program. And I'm very excited about being able to actually provide premium products to all these people who would like to microdose but are not able to get quality products. So they'd rather do nothing, which I think is probably the right thing. So if you are actually interested in accessing these products, you can go on my website and you can join the wait list. And my first batch will only be for 100 bottles. So don't be shy, put yourself on the wait list because it will be on the first come, first serve basis. And the third thing that I really thought was interesting in terms of commonalities across all the actors was the challenge for many businesses in the psychedelic space to reach actually profitability and scale. And ketamine clinics are a very real example of that. Many of these clinics are going under despite tremendous, passion, efforts, and investments to keep going. And unfortunately, many of these businesses just don't have a business model with solid economics. It's just not possible to make money the way they are structured. And I would say the belief and the love in the psychedelic space is great, is doable, but it's not enough to make a business profitable. And let's face it, scientists, academics, they don't necessarily make the best entrepreneurs either. So, a flurry of businesses in the psychedelic industry or adjacent to the psychedelic industry, they will consolidate or they will not survive. Others will pivot to a different model or a different geography. You see many retreats or products that already operate in friendly jurisdiction from the Netherlands and Jamaica. So you're going to see a lot of action on that. And actually, later this week, in a couple of days, I will be speaking on investing into the future of medicine and brain health at the Cannabis and Psychedelics Investment Summit in New York. So it will be really interesting to hear what the audience of family office and high net worth individual is looking when allocating capital to the psychedelic space. So thank you again for listening. Again, this is the Microdose Diet. My name is Peggy Van de Plasch. You can check my website, themicrodosediet.com, if you want more information on microdosing psilocybin. My book is already on pre-order on Amazon. So if you want to put yourself on the list and guarantee the price, please do so. It's going to be nice to have something with a stable price right now. So thank you so much for listening, and I'm really looking forward to staying in touch. Don't hesitate to comment. Bye. Have a great day. Thank you so much.